We can turn it around, we can turn it around, we can turn it around, but only if we stop the insanity and the way we're spending money and the kinds of places, corporations in particular, that we're trying, not we, but Congress, too many members of Congress, trying to protect, talking about $200 billion for polluters while we are cutting jobs, programs for children, education, and most of all, at least according to this show and our interest, a clean environment, and after all, there's no good jobs and no healthy children on a planet that is dying. So first and foremost, we need to protect our clean air, our water, stabilize our climate. Every day this week, I've turned on the Today Show, and there's, you know, yet again, another record tornado and killer storms and epic flooding. And my goodness, what more is it going to take to let people know that our weather ain't the same as it used to be, and that is because we are dumping CO2 into the atmosphere, can't prove it for sure, can't tie any one weather event to climate change, and yet if you expected to see changes in weather patterns and you looked at what's been happening across the globe with, the, of course, the fires and floods and droughts and extreme weather, Australia really has been seeing a lot of it. They're kind of the canary in the coal mine as far as climate change weather impacts. You'd have to admit that things are a little wacky, but sometimes even those stubborn folks on Fox News will tell you, no, it's just natural climate fluctuation. Not the case. And we need to see this reflected, this awareness, this concern we all should have in Washington, D.C., at the very heart of our legislature's actions. And we're not seeing that. And that's why we have to speak louder and scream. I would if I had a voice. I don't, but I'm going to have Michelle Chan come in and tell us all about the latest ridiculous actions and what we can do to stop it. And even in one case, a sample of what can happen when one person stands up. You can get a lot of kudos and some positive plaudits from the environmental community talking about what Senator Mark Kirk did. And Michelle Chan, welcome to the Green Front.
Thanks for having me, Betsy.
So I wanted to have you on because, first of all, of course, you're the Economic Policy Director for Friends of the Earth, but you took a moment out in a dispatch today to applaud what Senator Kirk did in showing some all-too-rare leadership on his side of the aisle.
Yeah. One of the things that Friends of the Earth really tries to do is we try to give some kudos to those members of Congress who are doing things right, whether they be on the Republican or the Democratic side of the aisle. And as all of you and your listeners know, we are in the middle of a battle, budget battle, on Capitol Hill right now. And, really the questions of how we spend our money and where we allocate our money is a real question of national priorities, and it's a question of values. And it really invokes a lot of things that are important to Americans, like fairness. But, you know, it also points to what we care about as a country and whether we care about environmental protection, whether we care about, public education and all these other kinds of things versus whether we care about, continuing to, whether members care more about continuing to reward their favorite campaign contributors in Congress by lavishing all kinds of subsidies on them. So, that's what we're facing now in D.C. The House passed a continuing resolution a little while ago, and that keeps the government going for a little while. Today, the Senate just voted, in fact, to pass a two-week continuation of spending, which means we will not probably have a government shutdown on Friday, which was the big thing that was looming on the horizon.
Maybe we should shut down government and just, stop, pause. Let's take a closer look at what we're doing here.
Yeah. And this two-week period in which we've got a little continuing resolution does allow everybody to sit back and think for a minute about what our priorities are and how we want to address our deficit. Because as many of your listeners know, a lot of the freshman Republicans that came into office just recently vowed to cut $100 billion, off of the budget as a way to deal with our rising deficit, which I think many people believe is an actual problem. So the question is, how are you going to do that? And that is where we saw really an abhorrent, type of proposal that was passed actually in the House, where you had, all kinds of fossil fuel subsidies intact. And instead of cutting those, and instead of cutting, for example, giant levels of subsidies to the corn ethanol industry, or to big big coal, King Coal, or to the big oil companies. You instead had a whole slate of very draconian spending cuts, which ranged from, you know, K to 12 education, Meals on Wheels, you know, 5 million meals that are now delivered to homebound elderly, you know, maybe at stake if we follow the House plan, you know, cutting Head Start on the environmental side, also really draconian cuts.
You know, what is so patriotic and American and all-American about that? You know, let's just stop and call a spade a spade. This is outrageous, so transparent that this is
absolutely
just continuing to, you know, bow to the special interests when the very special interest of protecting our environment and our children, you know, is being ignored. And how can they get away with that?
Yeah, it's really amazing. The thing that's when you look at the environmental cuts, the thing that's actually very arresting is that not only were there very, very deep cuts proposed to environmental agencies, environmental programs. So for example, the Clean Water State Revolving Funds. I mean, this protects you know, Americans against kind of urban runoff pollution and sewage pollution, you know, for millions of Americans. And, you know, so you can have, you see these examples of unwise environmentally, you know, and tax in terms of environmental spending. But at the same time, we also saw in these spending bills all kinds of attacks against literally the ability for the U.S. EPA to regulate. So, for example, we didn't just see attempts to slash EPA funding, but we also saw attempts to stop the EPA from implementing the Clean Water Act.
Thank you for mentioning that. No small thing they're trying to pull over here.
Absolutely. Not only the Clean Water Act, but attempts to try to stop the EPA from regulating carbon dioxide emissions through the Clean Air Act, which the EPA has the ability to do. And, you know, attacks against the EPA for the temerity, you know, of trying to regulate toxic coal ash. And so when, as your listeners probably know, when you burn coal, you also create an enormous amount of toxic leftover waste that contains mercury and arsenic and all of these, you know, other compounds and chemicals which can cause cancer. You know, if you stop the EPA from regulating coal ash, then it's essentially like an attack on the coal industry, right? Which is, you know, how it's being viewed. So we're seeing these, you know, we're seeing this budget battle not only play out along sort of the lines of what gets cut and what doesn't get cut, but also we've seen some real fundamental attacks on just the ability to regulate, you know, for the public interest.
You know, and this is all too familiar, you know, my interviewing people like you from these, you know, wonderful green organizations talking about what's wrong in Washington and at the top level. But we're not under George Bush. This is not the eight-year nightmare that we saw, those of us concerned about the environment. And we saw leaders playing, alleged leaders playing politics with the planet. This is under President Obama. And I know we just had a lot of Republicans, and nothing against Republicans. It's just that most of them tend to not be good environmental stewards and leaders on environmental legislation.
Yeah.
You know, Partiers don't believe in climate change, and I know many of them just came into office. How do you not get discouraged just when we thought we were finally getting our moment, we again, you know, speaking the voices for environmental protection, only to see things get more draconian, that's a good word, than ever?
They are getting draconian in terms of this particular budget battle. And, you know, looking back, when we saw President Obama, for example, in the State of the Union, actually call out oil company subsidies, mm-hmm. you know, that was heartening for a lot of groups like Friends of the Earth that have been working on oil subsidies for a long time. So we saw Obama propose in his budget to cut $46 billion worth of fossil fuel giveaways.
As you said, they're doing just fine on their own. Yes,
they're doing just fine on their own. Exactly. But you're right. Even Obama didn't go as far as we would have liked him to. Friends of the Earth believes that he actually left still billions of dollars on the table of other fossil fuel cuts that he didn't include in his budget. And we saw actually through the House debate on the budget, we saw a couple of attempts by members to introduce various amendments that would have helped, you know, really dig in terms of overturning some of these unfair, most of them are tax breaks for oil, gas, and coal companies. And these, you know, were, we had a couple of them introduced by Senator Menendez and Representative Blumenauer and Markey. And these were proposed, but they were rejected, you know. So we really have seen, some discouraging signs. But on the other hand, if you dig a little bit more deeply, it's not just purely a partisan thing. So, for example, I mean, we saw some Republicans vote in favor of ending these fossil fuel subsidies. And at the same time, we saw some Democrats not vote to and not support the ending of these subsidies. So, you know, it's a little bit more of a complicated, story than just sort of Republicans versus Democrats. And that's why today we put out a press release congratulating and applauding Senator Mark Kirk. He's a Republican from Illinois who said on C-SPAN in an interview that slashing subsidies to the oil companies is probably a good thing, that they were doing just fine on their own, and that a lot of these sort of handouts to big business are totally misguided. So, you know, we gave him some props for that.
We have to stop for a moment and give some props to the former governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't know if you read his statements.
I haven't.
He made a keynote speech yesterday in Washington, D.C. to the Energy Innovation Summit, and he said, it's time to terminate skepticism on climate change. And even though my voice sounds terrible, I have to just read you a couple of excerpts because there's some great quotes. And again, remember, he is a man who brought the idea of a Hummer as a civilian vehicle to General Motors, and boy, how far he has come, making a huge eco U-turn. He gets it. He's actually passionate about climate change action, and he's frustrated now, and hopefully he'll use his time, you know, post-governor to be speaking out more about it, and it looks like he's done just that. Here's a quote. He said, we want a new era of energy independence, a new era of green technology and green jobs, a new era of better health from a cleaner environment, and a new era of American inventiveness. He went on to say that using the analogies to leverage every aspect of his history, Schwarzenegger made the case that transitioning to a green economy, fixing the environment, and ending political stalemate over carbon legislation fell well within the power of today's technology and today's political climate. And he called for an end to the false debate over climate science, to stop assuming that China will provide new green tech cheaper and faster than us, the U.S., and to stop pretending that global warming will not affect people for decades. He said, why should a dried-up desert country with a crazy dictator like Libya play havoc with America's energy future? Hear, hear. Good for him, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, and when I started off the show, I mentioned that, you know, this budget debate is really a question of priorities and a question of, you know, how are we going to address our deficit? Is it going to be on the backs of the middle class and you know, lower-income people, or is it going to, you know, be a matter of stopping our handouts to big business? That's kind of one big choice that we have to make. But the other big choice that we're facing right now, I mean, really does go to Schwarzenegger's speech, and that is, you know, are we going to win the future, as President Obama mentioned in the State of the Union, right, by keeping the American people healthy and keeping our economy competitive by, you know, planning for the future, by protecting public goods, by investing in a low-carbon transition? Or are we just going to sacrifice tomorrow by, you know, essentially just cutting wildly at all kinds of very valuable programs to protect people and the environment while keeping all these corporate subsidies in place? And so it really is, you know, a decision not just with respect to who bears the brunt and who pays, but also, you know, what kind of future are we really choosing for ourselves and creating for ourselves?
Not to mention just engaging in this, experiment, you know, really playing with Mother Nature and gambling that, you know, we'll get lucky and that all these crises that are being predicted for the ocean, for our climate, will not come to pass, when all of the scientific community or all the credible scientists are out there saying, you know, it's later than we think, warning, warning, you know, shouting it. And scientists don't normally shout, and they don't normally get, anxious about these things, but we're seeing more and more of that because you are seeing legislators, our leadership, not listening to what science is saying and questioning that and not believing, quote, in science that is telling us that not only do we have severe climate change already on our shores, in our midst, but we have peaked in terms of our oil, and the second half of oil is not going to be as pretty or cheap or easy as the first half, and that we need to pay attention. And yet we're not only not paying attention, it would seem, based on what's happening in Washington or what's not, but again, the pendulum is still swinging in the wrong direction. So what can we do to raise the volume, Michelle? What needs to happen? I mean, you know, Friends of the Earth, Sierra Club, NRDC.
Right. Well, I mean, one of the things that we think that we do have some opportunities on is this notion of cutting fossil fuel subsidies. You know, not only are there really good reasons to do it because of the environment, but also I think that just as a fundamental value of fairness, even if you aren't an environmental organization, I think that, or an environmentalist, you could probably agree that we should not be lavishing some, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars worth of subsidies on a mature, very polluting industry that, you know, the top five oil companies made $1 trillion over the last decade. You know, I think that the idea of going after fossil fuel subsidies out of, you know, fairness, out of concern about climate change, out of, you know, concern of broader environmental pollution issues is something that can probably, I think, find some legs in this particular political climate. Because one of the it's one of these things that, you know, this is, gets a little bit wonky, but one of the things that that we have to make, I think, members of Congress understand, especially, you know, sort of the, you know, the, sort of the Republicans, is that, you know, there's two kinds of spending here, and there's all, you know, there's so much talk now about tightening, you know, tightening the belt and, you know, cutting spending. There's direct spending, which is, you know, your appropriations, like, you know, the money that you would allocate to Head Start or to Meals on Wheels. But there's also tax expenditures, and basically these are loopholes. These are exemptions that a lot of times companies or individuals don't have to pay. They're supposed to, but don't have to. And by essentially exempting them from it, it's another kind of spending. And until we are, you know, until we are committed to looking at that type of spending, the tax breaks, the tax loopholes that end up favoring a lot of big polluters, a lot of big campaign contributors, you know, we're not going to be able to actually deal with the budget situation we have now. And a lot of the fossil fuel subsidies are, you know, embedded in the tax code. So, you know, there's one example. In 2004, Congress passed a law that would essentially give tax breaks to manufacturers, American manufacturers, so they wouldn't ship their jobs offshore. Well, the oil and gas industry kind of weaseled their way into that and said, oh, we manufacture, you know, oil and gas, I suppose, products, so we should qualify for that tax break too. You know, they're not going to be running away anywhere. You know, they're going to drill for the gas before they drill for the gas. But they weaseled in, got this, you know, tax break, and that means that $1 billion a year goes straight into their pockets instead of into the coffers. And now we're talking about, or the House just passed a bill that would essentially, you know, take away that same $1 billion you know, gut the Clean Water State Revolving Funds and, you know, subject Americans to all kinds of water pollution. So, you know, what are we doing here? I think that
I'm thinking about launching a green tea party. That's what I'm doing. What do you think?
Right. I liked that idea. So, I mean, so Friends of the Earth would encourage your listeners and others, you know, to check our website, which is foe.org. We have, you know, all kinds of action alerts that are up, and people can take action to weigh in on this, you know, on this budget battle. It's pretty serious business, and you know, we think that by having this, you know, 2-week period in which, you know, the government won't shut down, it's really time for people to go back to square one, think really hard about these, you know, fundamental questions of, you know, fairness, of priorities, you know, of what we want for the future.
Can people access your Green Scissors report?
They certainly can. The Green Scissors report is a report we've put out last year. We're putting out another one. And it identifies $200 billion worth of subsidies and tax breaks that go to coal, goes to oil and gas, goes to nuclear, risky nuclear reactors, goes to corn ethanol subsidies, which are ludicrous. That's basically $35 billion a year that we're just giving away to
record.
Yeah, it's amazing. So this report can be found on our website as well. It's www.foe.org. There's a lot of stuff to dig into, you know, here, and we think that by, you know, mobilizing enviros as well as by, you know, strangely, as well as by some, you know, people with Tea Party tendencies.
Well, you know, and I would say to everyone, you know, as I do, if only they were listening, you know, those who don't think they're environmentalists, who don't think climate change is a real threat for whatever reason, okay, you don't need your environment. Try going without it for a day.
Mm-hmm.
No clean air, no water. Try going for a minute without clean air. No food.
Absolutely.
You know, it's ridiculous to separate ourselves from nature, our life support system, and think we can smugly not be into that. That's not my thing. And vote against it and not support the very life support system that makes life possible. It's kind of a big disconnect, wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
That would definitely be more clear.
Definitely. I mean, one of the cuts that was passed in the House was, you know, to food safety inspections. They would essentially lay off the food safety inspectors for like a month and a half. Of course, it would mean that probably some food manufacturing facilities, you know, might have to shut down during that time. But, you know, you bring these types of examples of environmental health and safety, public health, to your, you know, average American who may not consider themselves an environmentalist, as you say, and you ask them, so how does it make you feel to know that food safety inspectors are off the job?
You know, I still think we need really another good word. We need to replace environmentalist with something. I mean, sustainabilityist doesn't quite work.
Mm.
You know, all of those who are in favor of, you know, continuing to provide an environment for our children and grandchildren and beyond to thrive in, you know, and to act that way. That's what we need a new party for. You mentioned risky nuclear reactors. We just have a couple minutes, so I know I'm bringing up a big can of worms here. To ask, does Friends of Earth have a position on nuclear energy as a source, as part of the solution to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions?
We do. Friends of the Earth does not believe that nuclear power is a safe enough, viable enough option for us to really consider in our energy mix, I mean, let alone to be supporting and subsidizing. I'll throw in another subsidy factoid, which is that, you know, this, you know, we essentially put $46 billion on the table every 5 years for the nukes industry, which basically, you know, isn't profitable and wouldn't be able to get bank loans on their own. So when the over 50% of the nuclear power plants that aren't able to pay back their loans default, we, the taxpayer, have to pick it up. And, of course, we also, you know, have all kinds of other subsidies in place for them. For example, indemnifying them so that if there is a catastrophic nuclear accident, they actually aren't liable. And, of course, if you actually made the industry bear the full kind of safety and environmental costs of doing business, it would never survive.
Just like if consumers had to, you know, pay the full actual price of gasoline at the pumps, they would not be buying more SUVs now that the economy is rebounding.
Right. And so Amory Lovins, who is a very, very well-known, he's from the Rocky Mount Institute, said
sure.
that nuclear power is the most expensive way we've ever invented to boil water. And given the fact that we've got other just much more safe, much more environmentally benign ways of producing energy, we should really turn to those first.
And, of course, boiled water doesn't sound so dangerous, but a nuclear accident, Lord knows what havoc that might wreak. And speaking of havoc, we'll just end on this note with all the volatility in the Middle East still unfolding as we are seeing oil prices, you know, rise and gas prices rise. Are you optimistic that at least that might get Americans to be a little bit more focused on why we need to get off foreign oil and oil in particular?
Well, we hope that it will signal sort of behavioral changes amongst Americans with respect to how much they drive. We would hope that it would spur the public and policymakers to really think about investing in public transit and mass transit so as to give people real options when sort of the inevitable happens with respect to, you know, $100 oil. We're already there. But one of the things that we want to make sure doesn't happen is that we want to make sure that there isn't this massive sort of boom in biofuels, which competes with, you know, food crops. And we're seeing not only, we're not only seeing oil price spikes about ready to go, but also food price spikes about ready to go. And last time we saw that in 2008, we saw a ramp up of biofuel production. And from that, you know, millions of people were pushed into poverty around the world. So when we look at, you know, sort of the potential environmental upsides of, you know, an increased price of oil, there's also some kind of knock-on effects to also look out for as well.
Michelle, we have to go. I thank you for spending time with us. We've been speaking with Michelle Chan, Economic Policy Director at Friends of the Earth, and applaud you for all the great work you're doing over there, you and your friends at FOE. And let's hope sanity starts to set in.
Thanks for having me, Betsy.
Sanity. And it is about the economy and our health and all good things and preserving all good and beautiful things on this planet. Last time I checked, the only one we have. That does it for this edition of The Green Front. If you'd like to tell your friends about it, it's the best-kept secret in radio. Please go to www.thegreenfront.com for all of our programs, including today's. Should be posted up there later today. All the programs are archived. It's been just about a year that I've been doing this show on PRN. I want to thank the Progressive Radio Network for making this program possible. See you next time. In the meantime, have a great green week and spread the word. Later than we think. There's a lot we can do. A lot of work has to be done, and we need all of us to get on board. So count yourself among those who care and are part of the solution. Thanks again for joining me on The Green Front.